Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks, as always, for listening to AFR. And Ed Battagliano co-hosting with me today. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
Well, much to talk about today on the program. As we say often, it's a talk show. So if we ever come to the point where we say we don't have anything to talk about today, maybe you need to, we would say go somewhere else on the dial. But not now, because we got a lot of stuff to talk about the next hour and a half here on the program.
Yeah, in just a few minutes, we're going to be talking with Fred Jackson, who's news director for American Family News, about a number of important issues that I think are going to be of significance to our listeners. But the bottom of the hour, Dr. Tom Rayner, who's president and CEO of Lifeway Christian Resources. They've done a lot of research on changes inside the church, what pastors are doing to try to adjust to the changes in society today. And then next hour, attorney Michael Berry of First Liberty Institute will be talking about a fascinating case involving an Air Force veteran who was just simply making some statements at a retirement ceremony, and he mentioned God, and he was then removed by, I guess, military police or whatever. The Air Force is under some tremendous pressure and in some hot water for forbidding the mention of God. That's going to be next hour. That's a big to-do that is going on regarding the Air Force.
Fred Jackson in studio with us, news director for American Family News and OneNewsNow.com. Big ruling from the Supreme Court today, Fred?
Absolutely. The Supreme Court has struck down the Texas abortion clinic regulations. Now, basically what Texas and actually several other states have done about the same thing in trying to raise the health care standards of abortion clinics, what they wanted to do was ensure that clinics that do abortions come up to the level of a surgical center, and also that the doctors who were doing these abortions had admitting privileges at a local hospital.
So what would that matter? For example, give me an example.
Well, there have been several cases now where doctors doing abortions in this country are just total quacks, to put it quite frankly. And the conditions inside these abortion clinics, filthy. And so what Texas was trying to do is, if a woman is deciding to have an abortion, at least these centers, these abortion clinics, should have high enough standards to, with regards to protecting the safety of those women there.
But the admitting privileges part, for just a minute, just not to get too bogged down in the details of this, although what I'm talking about is, it's kind of the essence of the laws. The admitting privileges to local hospitals for the abortion doctor is to say if the woman has something happen to her,
can refer,
that the doctor, the abortionist, can go to the hospital.
Also, but I think there's another aspect to it too, that if you have admitting privileges, you have to meet a certain standard as a doctor.
Right, at AMD.
Yeah, I can't admit someone. I can't say, well, here's a good friend of mine. I can't call the local hospital and say, I want you to get him into surgery, and this is what he needs, and then they're going to say, well, who are you?
Yeah.
You know, you can't.
Okay.
Well,
yeah.
We need a medical opinion on this.
So Texas some other states pass laws through their legislatures and signed by their governors saying we want these standards of safety in place if you're going to do an abortion in our – this didn't outlaw abortions.
Nope.
Okay, you can't do that with Roe versus Wade as it stands right now. You can't totally outlaw abortions. But this was to set – we all saw what happened in the Gosnell case in Pennsylvania.
Right. Yes.
Where it was just – a house of horrors that they went in and discovered in this abortion clinic there in Philadelphia. And so they're trying to bring a certain level. We all know that it's killing of unborn babies, but the states are trying to do as much as they can to regulate these abortion providers and meet them, have them meet at least basic safety and health. But the Supreme Court said you can't do that.
5-3 decision. And that's where we are right now with Kennedy.
Why did they say that? Kennedy, for all intent purposes on social and moral issues, and is a liberal now. We keep calling him a moderate, but he's really not. Go ahead.
Justice Stephen Breyer wrote for the majority. He said the surgical center requirement, like the admitting privileges requirement, provides few, if any, health benefits for women, poses a substantial obstacle to women seeking abortions, and constitutes what he called an undue burden on their constitutional right to do so.
You know, I think what's at work here is that a lot of these abortion clinics are, you know, a hole in the wall somewhere, or just a small, you know, building with adequate facilities to do what they do for the money. You have these traveling abortionists who go from clinic to clinic. And like you said, Fred, some of these people are quacks. Mm-hmm. And so laws like this put those people out of business, which they should be out of business, you know, because it's easy to perforate a woman's, you know, uterus. There's all kinds of, as you said, Kermit Gosnell case up in Philadelphia. It was a house of horrors. It was completely unsanitary. They had, I'm not trying to get gross here, but there were body parts and there was blood that was, you know, still on walls, you know, day after day. It was just filthy.
But the state of Pennsylvania wasn't regulating them because they were an abortion facility, and abortion is the sacred cow of the political left in this country. So that's the reason they get a pass. Abortion.
It's an unregulated industry for the most part.
Just think about it for a moment. If you have to get your tonsils out.
Yes.
We wouldn't have clinics on the corner, as you say, hole in the wall, where you go have your tonsils out. Because the state and the federal government would be all over that. You're going to do it at a hospital where you can be taken care of properly. But abortion clinics are getting a pass. Justice Thomas joined with Roberts and Alito in opposing this. Thomas wrote for them. He says the decision, quote, exemplifies the court's troubling tendency to bend the rules when any effort to limit abortion or even to speak in opposition to abortion is at issue. Now, what Thomas is saying there is these other guys, the other five, and the courts in general, access to abortion is more important than the safety and health of the women.
But this is the progressive mindset. Mm-hmm. Across the board, progressives, when, for example, your kids go to a public school, you can't, teachers, the administration can't give them an aspirin without a note from the parent, or can't give them a pill without something from the doctor. But if they want birth control pills, and in some places, if they want an abortion, a teacher can take them.
Yeah. Don't have to tell the parents.
Now, the only progressives have that kind of hypocrisy, because what matters is their ideology and the subjugation of everybody else's beliefs to their worldview. It doesn't matter if this is internally contradictory. And this is the same thing. The same society that says you can't have your tonsils out on a corner in the back room of the drugstore by some guy who doesn't even, you know, isn't even regulated. This is the same society run by progressives, backed by Supreme Court, who says, oh, no, but you can do that for abortions.
Yeah.
You're listening to Today's Issue. So that's disappointing, to say the least, 5-3. So even if Antonin Scalia had been alive, the pro-constitutional side, I'll call it that, would have lost anyway on this. Abortion, folks, as you know, we've talked about this many times, is at its heart a spiritual issue. Now, the secular world does not understand that, but we as Christians certainly do. Satan is the enemy of the one true God. The one true God is for life. He creates life from conception.
Yes.
Forward, God endorses and embraces life. He gave us life. Satan, the enemy of God, the Bible says, I'm not making this up, this is what the Bible says, hates life. And what comes, the Bible says, to kill, steal, and destroy. So at the heart of what's going on here is that spiritual warfare. So that's why when you say, when you scratch your head sometimes and you say, why would anybody, even if you were pro-choice, why would you be against an abortion facility having basic health and safety standards to operate by? Well, what you would say is that I don't care about health and safety if it means an abortion might be prevented, because right. I am pro-abortion and I don't want to see those crazy Christians get their way by having life respected. And if I said things
No, that's absolutely. And the reason the devil hates life, he hates human life because we're made in the image of God and he hates God. So any person...
It is at its heart a spiritual...
Yes, it is. That's why the devil hates humanity. And he hates the continuation of human life on the planet, which is why he hates unborn right. children. Because this is the continuation of the image of God on earth. And every time the devil looks into the face of a human being, whether it be an unborn child or a baby or a teen or an adult, he sees the image of mm-hmm. God. He is reminded of his ultimate judgment. And like you said, Tim, it is a perfect explanation. This is a spiritual reality, and the Bible makes clear that those who are in the flesh, they do not understand the Word of God. They don't understand the cross. They don't understand any of this. It is to them foolishness. But it's real nonetheless.
So that's a Supreme Court decision that will impact. It'll impact the Fifth Circuit and the country, I would suppose. But the battle rages on, the pro-life versus pro-death forces in our country. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio. This only emphasizes the huge significance of who the next president is. Because who the next president is will make a big difference on what the Supreme Court looks like going forward. Because with Antonin Scalia having passed away, that was a stalwart conservative. And so now the Supreme Court is likely to have Justice Thomas, another stalwart conservative. There's rumblings that he might retire. The age of the liberal justices, two of them at least, in their 80s, so there's going to be three or four mm-hmm. appointments over the next 4 years. And if Hillary Clinton wins the presidency, the Supreme Court will be lost for a generation to secular humanists, liberals, progressives, whatever you want to call them. And they'll vote in lockstep because liberals always vote in lockstep with one another. So if Donald Trump is elected president, he has vowed. I'm just telling you what he says, folks.
Right.
So when you say, well, Tim, you're being duped, he's not going to do that. Well, it wouldn't be the first time I've been duped in my life. Okay. I'd probably be duped at lunch my server.
I said chimichanga, not chalupa.
Right. Well, you were duped, sir, because you're too dumb to know what's going on here. Well, just bring me the salsa, ma'am. That's all
I'll
want.
Do the best I can.
Okay. So my point is here, folks, that yes, politicians and those running for office do lie to people in order to get you to vote for them. That does happen. I understand that. I'm just telling you what Donald Trump has said. And he made this commitment to the group of Christian leaders who met with him last week. He said, my Supreme Court justices will be vetted by the Federalist Society, which I know people at home probably don't know who that is or listening on this program. They are the gold standard, if you will, as far as conservatives go for judicial appointments. So suffice it to say, that is a really good thing for Donald Trump to say. McCain didn't promise this. Romney didn't promise this. George W. Bush didn't promise this. That's a big deal for Donald Trump to make that kind of commitment. And he also says, my judges will be pro-life. He said that to the group last week, too. So I'm just telling you what the two candidates say. Hillary Clinton says she's going to go forward with the Obama type of appointments, which are far left people.
And she immediately tweeted this morning after the Supreme Court ruling that she was in favor of that ruling. So that was prepared ahead of time.
Yeah,
that's what you have with her.
Donald Trump, completely the opposite. Now, I haven't seen what he said about this decision, But as far as the kinds of judges he will says that he will appoint. So I'm just offering you that for your consideration as you go to the think about who to vote for in the fall. What else? We need to switch topics here because we've only got a few minutes left here. Was there anything else you wanted to add?
Another Supreme Court decision this morning. Unanimous Supreme Court decision, which overturned the corruption conviction against former Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell. McDonnell.
Maybe that's how you pronounce it in Canada.
Yeah, there it is.
McDonnell.
And he was convicted in 2014 of accepting more than $165,000 in gifts and loans from a wealthy businessman, and he was sentenced to 2 years in prison. Now, he's been out awaiting this decision this morning. His wife was also convicted in this case. Basically, he received gifts. His argument was, but he didn't do anything above what a legislator would do for any other constituent. You know, he had meetings set up so that this person, I think they were selling
dietary supplements.
Yeah. But in any way, what's fascinating about this, lower courts convict this former governor.
Republican governor.
But today, all eight justices said they made a mistake. Now, this is amazing.
They made a mistake of the lower.
The lower court made a mistake.
Okay.
Eight justices.
Eight to nothing ruling.
And, of course, the way that the press is spinning it at this point, this is going to make it more difficult for courts to convict politicians of bribery, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, I heard another analysis just before coming into the studio. This actually may help Hillary Clinton if she was ever indicted, because one of the things involves the Clinton Foundation and some quid pro quo stuff that goes on. She was out while she was Secretary of State meeting with these heads of government, and all of a sudden these heads of government make contributions to the foundation, the Clinton Foundation. And they were saying, could it be that the liberal justices are looking down the road to an impossible indictment of Hillary Clinton, and this gives them an out that there ought to be a very high bar to convict a politician, you know, when they receive gifts or benefits from somebody
interesting.
Yeah, it was fascinating.
Now, just a teaching moment for our listeners. Fred, who's fluent in Latin, used the phrase quid pro quo, and you've probably heard it before. It simply means this for that.
Yeah.
And that's a description of when someone says, all right, you give me this, I'll give you that.
You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours.
That's right. So you hear quid pro quo, that's exactly what it means. You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours.
Anyway, it's fascinating that the liberals all went and now, you know.
Well, it's interesting. I was wondering, 8-0 on behalf of a Republican governor. Maybe some people were thinking on that Supreme Court about a Democratic Secretary of State.
Interesting. Just never know.
You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Battaglione. We're talking to news director Fred Jackson from American Family News and OneNewsNow.com. Please visit our website, OneNewsNow.com. If you want news and information from a Christian that doesn't exclude the Christian news and from a conservative standpoint, an honest standpoint, I think OneNewsNow.com is our website. Please check that out. You'll be impressed by that. And we work hard on that news site, OneNewsNow.com.
The Supreme Court decision today with regards to the Texas regulations abortion is a clear difference. We are going after the pro-life groups today, Students for Life, Texas Pro-Life.
When you say we're going after OneNewsNow, are you going for interviews with
those folks? Our reporter is going for interviews with the pro-life people.
Right.
Hey, the good news, you know, if there's a silver lining here to this story is I was reading yesterday, abortions are down in this country at the lowest level they've been in a long time. So I think the pro-life message is being communicated. The younger generation, for all their faults, they're more pro-life than they are pro-choice. We're making headway. This is a setback, if you will, this ruling, but the pro-life message is making headway. In this country, I think primarily because of the 3D ultrasounds and the advancement of technology, people are able to see now what's going on inside the womb, where, you know, it was out of sight, out of mind when Roe versus Wade.
Right. It was all theoretical, abstract.
Let's talk now. Let's change the story. We want to talk about what's happening with Britain. They voted the citizens of Britain, which would include England, Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland. Mm-hmm. Is that true? Mm-hmm. They voted to leave the European Union, which That's they right. had been a part of for how long? Do you know how long?
It started back 20, 25 years ago, at least.
Yeah, I think the EU has existed for 40 years.
Mm-hmm. Basically, for people who don't know what this is, I'll try to be as simple as possible. This is a conglomerate of countries, obviously inside Europe, or the continent of Europe, thus the name, that came together to have a currency that they shared, and also a trade agreements that they would agree to. They wanted to be, they were the United States of Europe for all practical purposes, okay? Mm-hmm. They own trade agreements and things of this nature. And now Britain, for example, the people of Britain having reservations about this. They're saying, you know, we want to get back to being sovereign and independent. We don't want to be responsible for the rest of Europe.
That's the bottom line. One of the big issues, believe it or not, similar to one of the big issues here in our election, was immigration. Because they were a member of the EU, the EU dictated how many of these migrants coming out of Syria would go to Britain. Last year, 300,000 of these migrants went to Britain, much on their own choice, because Britain has one of the most generous packages for people coming into the country. But the Brits there said, wait a minute, we're worried about our safety because of lawbreakers. Remember the incidents in Germany around New Year's?
Yeah.
Women being raped by these migrants. And there have been several other incidents.
The Belgium is right across the channel, and they had their attack on the airport. Right.
Paris attacks, you know. So
they've already got a lot of Muslims inside Britain anyway. They're not wanting to take any more.
They had the London bombings several years ago.
Go ahead.
So there's immigration was a huge issue. Also, just they're controlling our economy. They're telling us everything to do.
Talk about the EU.
EU. One of the writings that I saw that broke the camel's back, as it were, was last year, I think it was, the EU dictated whether they could have an open flask of olive oil on their restaurant tables. The EU ordered you couldn't do that.
Right.
And so these are the kinds of things. If it sounds familiar, like a federal government telling you everything you should eat and all that sort of thing, that was going on in Britain. Now, what was interesting is all the political establishment, the media. Barack Obama was telling the Brits what to do leading up to this election. And what happened was, at the end of the day, the Brits said, no, we don't want it, by a 52-48 margin. Mm-hmm. And they had a huge voter turnout. Over 70% of the over 70% of the electorate voted in this. Yeah. So that's how strong the vote was.
And then Cameron resigned, the prime minister.
Cameron resigned right away. And
when is this? Of course, the stock markets were rocked all over the world. Mm-hmm. When is this going to take effect, though?
Now, my understanding, it could take
several months.
Yeah, this one story from the Associated Press said it might take decades. Is it going to take that long?
That's a bit of a stretch. What I heard initially was that it's going to take at least several months.
Yeah.
The British Parliament has to vote on this, but probably will not overturn the vote, although some are advocating they do that. That's unlikely. But there's going to be ramifications for this. And some people are saying Hillary Clinton better sit up and take notice, because as Donald Trump said last Friday, he said the same kind of sentiments that he saw in Britain in this vote, that we don't want the federal government telling us everything to do, he's seeing it here and tapping into it here in the United States.
Very interesting. Thank you, Fred.
You're welcome.
OneNewsNow.com. Visit the website, folks. It's our news website. We have a team of reporters. We put a lot of time, energy, and effort into making that a first-class website and news source, onenewsnow.com, onenewsnow.com. Ed and I shall return after this short timeout. You're listening to Today's Issues. We will be back in a minute.
Next time on Today's Issues, we'll talk with Tom Veeley, president of New Beginnings.
I've heard it's real hard to adopt Why is that?
It's difficult. Well, you've got abortion taking the lives of many of the children, and then you have a system today in America promoting single parenthood.
We'll also talk with Heather McDonald, author of The War on Cops, and Stacey Farrell, author of I'd Rather Be Your Mommy. That's all next time on Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on AFR, and online at AFR.net.
Did you know that the Arlington National Cemetery was originally built during the Civil War? That's right. It was the home of Robert E. Lee, actually, who was the general of the Confederacy. Little known fact about the Arlington National Cemetery, which today is an iconic tribute to our fallen heroes. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. We'll visit the Arlington National Cemetery in September on our spiritual heritage tour, as well as going to many other sites in our nation's capital. We'll also go to the home of George Washington, Mount Vernon. In addition, Colonial Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown will be a place we visit just prior to our nation's capital. So if you'd like to go on either of these tours in September, or both, we welcome you to find out all the information at the website spiritualheritagetours.com. That's spiritualheritagetours.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and commentary next. The University of North Carolina has been inflicted with a microaggression pandemic, releasing guidelines urging employees to stop using potentially offensive language. Workers are to avoid complimenting a woman's shoes or inviting a colleague out for a round of golf, all considered to be forms of microaggressions. Offering male and female as the only gender options is also a no-no, as is the phrase Christmas vacation, which apparently minimizes non-Christian holidays. Had a dream the other night. Ran into a gender-neutral Muslim fella down at the driving range. Once he found out I was a gun-toting, Bible-clinging, sweet tea-drinking son of the South, he came down with one of those microaggressions. Faster than you could say Jesus is the reason for the season, he set off for his designated safe space. Never saw a fella run so fast in stilettos. Nice shoes, though. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the radio program Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Tim Wildman with Ed Battagliano. Hey, we do have some spaces still left on the Spiritual Heritage Tour, Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon. In September, beautiful month to visit our nation's capital. We've also got the trip to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown scheduled, just preceding the Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon tour. In September, if you want to go on both of those trips, it'll take a week of your time, but it'll be time well spent, well worth it. We'd love to have you. So if you're interested in, or you can go on either one of the trips. You don't have to go on both of them. To Washington, D.C., Mount Vernon, Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. If you think you can handle a week with me, I don't know.
It's usually a good-sized group, though. They don't have to, like, stand
right by your
shoulder.
That's true. You don't have to mix and mingle with me the whole time. You know, you can avoid me.
Right.
To a certain extent, because you will be on the bus.
Yeah.
And you'll be a captive audience. So I can't, you know, you can bring your earphones. If my voice annoys you or if I get on your nerves. But
I don't think anybody's going to go on the Spiritual Heritage Tour if they don't like you.
Duly noted, Ed. Yeah. That's a good point. But if you'd like to go, we got some space left for the September tour. Here's what you need to do. It starts September 11th, the Williamsburg. September the 11th, in the evening, we'll meet at 5 o'clock at Reagan Airport. And then Sunday night, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Williamsburg, Jamestown, Yorktown, and then Wednesday night we start our D.C. in Mount Vernon Park. So if that's something you want to do, love to have you. Go to the website spiritualheritagetours.com. Spiritualheritagetours.com.
And you have good quality people go along on these trips.
Oh, man.
My brother and sister-in-law went on your last one.
Yeah. Yeah, we have people from all over the country. Most of them are listeners to AFR just like you. So, and this is not just a, hey, look at that monument. Isn't that nice? Let's move on to the next one. We have Stephen McDowell of the Providence Foundation with us, and he's a historian. So So everywhere we go, we talk about the people, the places, the events, the times that existed, that our country was founded, or the things that led to the to who we are, who we became as Americans. So it's going to be a wonderful time of learning, and also of just fellowship. So there you go, spiritualheritagetours.com. If you want to call and order a brochure, you can call us at 800-FAMILIES, option 5. Leave your name and your address. 1-800-FAMILIES, option 5. Leave us your name and your address. Again, that's for September, which will be here before you know it. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Just one question. I wasn't following this Britain vote on leaving the EU. In fact, I didn't even know it was going to happen like 2 or 3 days before it happened, I think. But were you surprised at the vote?
Well, I surprised only in the – I mean, I'm not an expert on European politics. From what I had read, the vote was expected to be close. But with the murder of a member of parliament the week before the vote, Jo Cox, it's a lady, she was for remaining in the EU. That seemed to switch some sentiment in favor of the remain. That's the way we're calling it, remain and leave sides of this political divide. So I think the expectation was that remain would win. And so I think there was a great deal of shock and surprise when 52-48, those favoring leaving the European Union won. So surprised, I just was going by what I had been reading. It was supposed to be close, but the expectation was that Remain would win, and that prognostication was incorrect. And that gives rise and has given rise to some of the speculation that not only that vote, but the rise of conservative political groups in Europe and the rise of Donald Trump in this country seem to indicate something going on in a broader context of Western civilization. People are tired of abusive government. They're tired of bureaucratic regulations. They're tired of politicians who go along to get along so they can get reelected, but who seem to be lining their own pockets. All that kind of thing seems to be reaching a fever pitch, and that's what a lot of people are reading into all this.
Yeah, I agree, and I think Donald Trump's message is similar to what the message was of get out of the EU.
Right.
In Great Britain. You know, his message, his theme, he wants America to be great again.
Right.
And what I'm getting from that is he wants America to be more independent and not so dependent on what he would say NAFTA and
Government regulations.
Globalist, the globalist intentions.
That don't have the good of America uppermost in their minds. Obviously, if you're a globalist, you're part of a multinational corporation and you just want to make money, and you take your factory from America, you move it somewhere else where you can maximize your profits. So, you know, Trump and others like him, a lot of libertarians and conservatives would agree that the globalists don't put America's best interest first. If you have to lay off 100,000 U.S. workers in order to make a factory work in China or in Mexico, you do that. We don't have a problem with it. Well, a lot of Americans do have a problem with it, and they're tired of it. And it may very well be seeing the same thing with regards to bureaucracy and especially immigration in Europe.
So he's sort of tapping into the sort of a nationalist view, if you will. Some would say protectionist.
Right.
I've heard some people say, what's wrong with the protectionism?
Right.
Well, we don't want to get into all the economics of that because
I don't know the
why,
answer.
Because
to
we
it.
Would be pretending to understand it. That's why.
Right. I want to hear smart people.
Maybe Dan
Celia
can come on and talk to us about this. You know, it's pluses and minuses to this free trade that we have going on. A lot of pluses and minuses. And Donald Trump says, he would say, well, I don't mind free trade as long as it's fair.
Right.
So there's a whole, it's very, but we, none of us can ignore all the jobs that we've lost across the country to
Was it Carrier Air Conditioning?
Yeah, they just moved to Mexico, I think.
Just moved. So people, you know, that upsets people. They go, well, what about American jobs? Okay, so people in Mexico.
Do we even make anything anymore, hardly?
Right.
You know, it's just.
It's good for Carrier. A lot of Mexicans will get jobs when it moves there.
Right.
What about the Americans who lose their jobs?
Right.
And people are getting tired of that.
And we've seen whole industries leave.
Right.
America. And I guess people are, you know, a lot of people are getting worried that we're losing all these jobs. What are we going to do to make up for it?
You know?
And so Donald Trump is tapping into that. But, hey, there's a lot of people, you know, who don't agree with him.
Yes.
As we can see by the polls, he's still trailing Hillary Clinton. And, of course, these polls are going to fluctuate between now and November. So if you're going to get exhausted, get whiplash from these. If you're going to follow the polls every day or every week on who leads the presidential election. But as of yesterday, Hillary Clinton was slightly ahead of Donald Trump in almost all the polls that I saw. You know, 4 or 5 points. Something like that. That could change tomorrow, you know. But I'll tell you this one thing. It's hard for any Republican, I don't care who they are, Donald Trump or even if it had been Jeb Bush or whoever it had been, to win a national election any longer because the Electoral College map is stacked against Republicans. Republicans, whoever the candidate is, has to sweep all the swing states to win because California and New York, and Illinois, for example, three huge states with great number of electoral college votes, they're going to go Democrat. It doesn't matter if Satan himself were on the ballot.
You're right.
That's a little bit of an exaggeration. Okay, I understand that. But I'm just saying that they're going to vote Democrat.
Well, let's say Bozo the Clown.
Bozo the Clown.
If Bozo the Clown.
Yeah, a little less threatening than Satan himself.
Right.
Probably.
I think Democrats generally, as far as the electoral map goes, I think they start with 230 electoral votes.
They don't even have to work for it.
Yeah, 270 is what you need to win. So Republicans have to carry all the states they normally carry, and then, like you said,
all the swing states.
The swing states have to go in their favor. Otherwise,
so it's an uphill battle, and has been for the last three election cycles for any Republican, Donald Trump or any of them. But we'll see how that goes. But, you know, the polls will swing back and forth, I think, from now till November. You're listening to Today's Issues on AFR. Hey, our next guest is with us.
Yes. I want to welcome Dr. Tom Rayner, who's president and CEO of Lifeway Christian Resources. He's a former pastor and author of 20 books, including the one we're going to discuss with him today, Who Moved My Pulpit? Leading Change in the Church. Tom, welcome to Today's Issues.
Thank you, gentlemen. Good to be with you.
Well, so Who Moved My Pulpit? That's a very interesting title, and it actually, my understanding is, references a true story about an actual pulpit. So tell us the story, and then tell us, explain the title and what the book's about.
Okay, I borrowed freely from an old secular change book called Who Moved My Cheese, and so I have to give full credit to that title as far as the title goes. Beyond that, there was not a whole lot of borrowing from Who Moved My Cheese. The true story takes place when a pastor develops a more informal preaching style in his church. He begins to see more millennials come into the church. And the preaching style, while continuing to be expository, is a more relational style. And he has this big old pulpit, the old desk, the huge wooden pulpit. And so he decides during the week to get a couple of custodians to get that thing off of the podium. And he then moves in a small, almost unnoticeable lectern or pulpit. And then he gets to church the next Sunday, and there is an uproar. There is an absolute uproar over the moving of the pulpit. And this is a pastor who is well liked, been in the church for 7 years, and very well accepted. The screaming of "Who moved my pulpit?" though does not occur from the congregation. It occurs when he returns the following Sunday, and realizes that they, the congregation, or some representatives of the congregation, have moved the old pulpit back. And that's when he cries out, "Who moved my pulpit?" Thus becomes the introduction and the segue to this whole issue of change in the church and how do we lead change in the church?
So that sounds, I'm sorry, but that sounds fairly typical for church life in America. Sad to say, who moved my pulpit? You might have named it who gave you the right to get blue carpet instead of purple like I wanted. I mean, are Americans really that focused on such inconsequential matters, or is that just kind of
blue
an old
carpet?
Well, what I'm saying is, when people
would
argue,
be opposed to blue carpet too. You got to take a stand. You got to take a stand somewhere.
You really do. Those are important issues.
I'm sorry,
right?
I want to interrupt you. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, is that just a kind of a caricature of the church, or are we really that focused on the color
really
of the carpet?
We really are that focused. We really are that focused. Let's look at some of the numbers. Approximately 9 out of 10 churches, Protestant churches in America, are either declining or they are growing at a pace that is slower than the community growth rate. Or to state that simply, 9 out of 10 churches are losing ground in their community. Between 7 and 8 out of 10 churches are actually numerically declining. And while numbers are not everything, they should be an indicator that we're reaching fewer and fewer people with the gospel. So what does that mean? We, the American churchgoer, are focusing a lot on manners, and we have become complacent to the urgent matters, and the most urgent matter is, of course, getting the gospel out into our communities and out into the world. So there can be no doubt that at least in the Western Church, and particularly the North American Church of Canada and the U.S., there can be no doubt that we have certainly become complacent. We have certainly focused on the manners, and maybe some of them are good, but you know, it's really a sin to be good when God has called us to be great, and He's given us a great commission. He's given us a great commandment. And 1 Corinthians 13 says, the greatest of these is love. And so many times we don't focus on the great, we focus on the good, or even the inconsequential. And the result is what the fruit that we're seeing across America. The result is over the course of the next decade, we will probably have 100,000 of our 350,000 churches close their doors. So I was with y'all about 2 years ago, with the station about 2 years ago, and I talked about a previous book called Autopsy of Deceived Church, and that was basically the result, and this is this book, Who Moved My Pulpit, is the why.
Tom Rainer, our guest, THOM, S. Rainer, Who Moved My Pulpit, that's what we're talking about, Leading Change in the Church is a subtitle. Broadman and Holman, the publisher. Tom is the president and CEO of Lifeway Christian Resources. How many bookstores y'all got?
177.
And you've been around 20 years now, haven't you, Lifeway, or longer?
I've been at Lifeway for 10 years.
Okay.
Yes, about me personally.
Well, that and the store, the chain.
Lifeway's been around since 1891, and the store started in the 1940s.
Wow.
1891. Yes, I missed that by 100 years.
Please, I haven't been here since 1891.
Oh, well, I was going to say, what vitamins are you taking?
Huh? I am the ninth president since 1891.
Okay.
And we started, the stores used to be called Baptist bookstores, and they transitioned in the 90s to Lifeway Christian stores.
I got a, you know, you mentioned some of the numbers that are going on in terms of Christian churches in America today, and I've got a theory. I don't know how this lines up exactly with your views or your findings. It's just a hunch or a theory, because a lot of my fellow Christians want to beat up the church. By the church, I mean the Church of Christ. Not the denomination, the Church of Christ, but the Church of the Lord across the country. But that's a wide range of churches I've just mentioned, and denominations, and even the non-denominational movement, quite frankly, is moving growing in many respects more than the denominational. But here's my point. I think the stagnation, if you will, of the growth in churches in America today is due to the fact that the majority of Americans reject rejecting God and rejecting anybody telling us how to live. if you're gonna follow God, guess what? God, the God of the Bible, you have to conform to His nature and His will, and He has standards that He imposes on you, and so you have to, you know, to that extent, you have to surrender. You got to die to self, as the Bible says. So I think we live in a very selfish time and era, culture, and people are no longer want to go. You no longer have to go to church out of societal pressure, which I think was a good thing. Some people would say no, it wasn't a good thing. I think it was a good thing that people felt that kind of pressure, but they don't any longer. So I think it's more due to just the general culture's rejection of God, not so much the fault of the church itself. But maybe I'm wrong, to borrow from Bill O'Reilly. what do you think about that, Tom?
Well, first of all, you hit the nail on the head in many, many respects. Let's pick on my denomination. Feel free to do that.
Southern Baptist?
Or non-denomination. Okay. So I'm going to pick on Southern Baptist. Southern Baptists have approximately 16 million so-called members, but on a given Sunday, we only have 7 million showing up. And given some leeway for vacation or sickness or other factors, that's still a lot of Christians who are AWOL. So there's a very clear indicator that you're right, that we are yielding to culture and that culture is bending the church. Now, where I would say it's not culture's fault, I would still say it's our fault, because the first century of Christianity, the culture was not very friendly to the church, but the church dented the culture with the presence of the gospel. And so I think that we're in an era where, yeah, culture is against us, but last time I checked, we had all that we needed to win. And we just got to begin to be obedient. So I follow you on most of that. But I will still say the responsibility rests primarily with Tom Rainer and other Christians.
Yeah, but how do we force people to be Christians?
Yeah, that was going to be my question.
How is Tom supposed to force everybody that you come in contact with to yield to Christ?
Oh, I'm not going to force everybody. But if I yield to Christ, If I become a true salt and light Christian, if I am a true regenerate church member, then there are going to be more people who will see Christ in me, and they will yield to Christ. I can't force it, but the more we have in our church that are Christ-like, I feel very, very strongly that the more people will come to Christ.
So how would a pastor, let's say a pastor reads your book, let's say a pastor is seeing what your research is showing and seeing the decline, seeing a very, you know, self-centered, complacent church, how does a pastor make changes in his church without having the old pulpit moved back in?
Well, I have had a number of pastors ask that very question. And when I say number, I literally mean in the hundreds through different venues. And I have a simple answer, but that does not mean it's a simplistic response. My simple answer is, Pastor, begin with you. I was a pastor. My first church that I pastored had 7 members. It was a congregational vote to get me in, and the vote was only 6-1. I was such a lousy preacher, I couldn't get a unanimous vote out of 7 people. And the church had been around since the late 1700s.
Wow.
Had not seen a conversion for over a quarter of a century. And I began to complain about the people in the church. God convicted me. Tom, begin with you, and then let's see what happens. God let me lead one person to Christ, and then that person became my mentee, and we began to share the gospel in the little community, and the rest became a true God thing. I think if all hope is gone, our parent hope is gone, the real issue is, God, what can you do through me? And then we will see what happens otherwise. Hmm.
Tom Rainer is with us, T-H-O-M. Rainer, R-A-I-N-E-R. He's the author of the book, Who Moved My Pulpit? Leading Change in the Church is a subtitle published by Broadman and Holman, and he is Tom serves as the CEO of Lifeway Christian Resources. we got 5 minutes left here at the most, and I'm fixing to introduce something that's very controversial. I get somewhat controversial.
You're going to give Tom 5 minutes.
Yeah, let him answer it. A seminary class in 3 minutes.
He's This is
Tim Wildman. What I've observed talking to people, other Christians out throughout the country, and what I've observed, TV, radio, television. I guess TV and television, same thing. But anyway, Christian broadcasting and so forth, so on. Tom, I think what's damaged the church to a large extent is this cheap grace message. I know that's kind of broad and generic, and I don't want to name any names. But I hear a lot of teaching today, and it's just, it's not be ye holy as God is holy. It's not righteousness promoted. It's a lot of it is, man, basically you just live like, you can live on the edge, you know, and God will
still bless you.
Still bless you and forgive you. He understands. You know what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying. There are two things that come to mind immediately. One is the prosperity gospel, which is not the gospel at all.
Right.
And then the second is the easy believism.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about. That's a large part of what I'm talking about. Go ahead.
In many of our churches, where basically it's walking out, sign a card, raise a hand, and you're in without any sense of what does it mean to be a follower of Christ.
Right.
And so in that sense, I think cheap grace is pervasive. I understand the tension there because grace is free.
Right.
Most Christians understand what we're saying when we say cheap grace. We're not considering what Christ has done for us and what is our response to that. So you know, from my perspective, Tim, you're really not saying anything that's controversial to me.
Okay.
You're speaking biblically.
Amen, brother. Well, that's what you described is just what I was talking about. I was kind of inarticulate about it, but I just think, go ahead, Ed.
No, I'm with you fellers. I think the power of the gospel is the power of the gospel. It is meant to change people. And if people are saying they've been changed but are not changed,
right,
then either they don't understand what their response was supposed to be or
right,
what's being preached is not
right,
the real gospel. I mean, assuming, as you said, Tim, that there are people who hear the real gospel preached in its Holy Spirit power but who just simply say no to it. But I don't think that's the problem in a lot of churches. I think in a lot of churches, the real gospel is not being preached in the power of the Holy Spirit.
You really believe that?
I just think that American Christianity has moved away. Again, and I don't think Tom is saying that all churches are this way. We're just saying that a majority of them have moved away from the real gospel, and that's why these churches are filled with fake Christians. And
so true.
Yeah.
Unregenerate church membership is pervasive.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I think that's and as a result, you're not, it's going to be very hard. I like your emphasis, Tom, on the pastor saying, well, I'm going to live right, I'm going to preach right, I'm going to gain some people. This is what you kind of lay out in your book. I'm going to kind of gather an eager coalition. We're going to do what we're called to do and have to let the chips fall where they may.
There you go. Good summation of the book.
Yeah, and the chips fall where they may is a gambling.
I was thinking of Pringles chips, but you may be right.
Okay.
Maybe it's a wrong.
Your
yeah.
Analogy. Didn't even consider potato chips as your. Tom,
I'm in trouble, Tom.
Tim Wildman and Ed Battagliano with you folks, and we thank Tom Rayner for being our guest. Tom, I wish you much success with the book and the message. Appreciate you being on with us.
Thanks, guys. But good to be with you.
Okay, bye-bye. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. We will return, Lord willing.
And if the creek don't rise.
The creek don't rise. We'll be with you in 5 minutes after the news with more of Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.